Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our series of draft shows tonight. And tonight, we're going to talk about the running back group. An interesting one. Certainly a lot of different characteristics in this group. Here to talk to me about it is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Glad to be here.
Always great to have you on, my friend. You living life out there in the 907. And we always mention that he's in Alaska. One of the reasons is it's a time zone difference that we have to schedule around a little bit. So we're recording this at 2 a.m. in the morning on 4/17 for other things that might happen between now and draft day purposes.
Yeah.
So maybe we talk a little bit ahead of that about the Ravens' current situation at running back and some of the issues for them and whether or not a running back would make sense really for them in any round in this draft. The Ravens come into this year, of course, with a couple of guys who are not guaranteed to be on the team in 2024. A contract with some void elements to it for Gus, and a contract that is in its fourth year with J.K., who is a second-year player. So he won't have another year and will be on the free agent market potentially after 2023.
Yeah. On the running back position that we've all seen this offseason, those guys aren't getting paid. So that's why you see a guy like Gus Edwards take a pay cut instead of making $5 million. He's making, I'm not sure exactly what he's making now, but they accepted that restructure and said in this sense to stay with the team because he knew he wouldn't have sniffed that much money on the open market. So it made sense for him to come back. But running back is one of the kind of underrated needs for this team heading into the season. Whoever they draft is probably going to get a lot of PT as a rookie, but in 2024 and beyond, it just makes sense to, I want to draft running back every year, but like to keep that cycle going of, you know, like guys who could come in and play key roles. So nobody does the whole workhorse back anymore. It's all running back by committee. I mean, even the teams like the Niners and the Saints who have Kamara and McCaffrey, like having good number twos and number threes.
Mm-hmm. That's true. There's only a couple teams. Joe Mixon does most of the running there for the Bengals, I guess. But there aren't many teams that put it all on one guy's shoulders. And there aren't that many backs, frankly, coming out who really look like they'd be the guys after what I guess is both of our top guy. So, it's an interesting one. The Ravens have a similar problem on the defensive line with guys who are going to be graduating out of the system. I'm hopeful that the Ravens can sign one of Madubuike or Washington to a somewhat team-friendly deal to basically keep them around maybe another 3 years before the season starts. But they've also... You know, the team is now fairly well cursed with dead money in 2024 that is going to make it very difficult to do a lot of maneuvering with Lamar potentially needing another tagging in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, this whole Lamar situation, I mean, we continue to talk about it ad nauseum, right? It's kind of like the black clouds hanging over this entire organization's head from a financial standpoint, from a morale standpoint, from a roster construction standpoint. I mean, you're really kind of playing and trying to build this team with one hand tied behind your back, just trying to, you know, find ways, creative ways. I mean, I never thought the Ravens were going to be a big void year team team, but after seeing what they had to do with Gus and then the Odell signing, having 4 years of void on there, it's just really kind of telling you what the kind of extremes they're going to have to do. They have to do just to field a competitive team this year.
Right. It's exceptionally frustrating to me to see the kind of the fan base. I don't want to insult the whole fan base because I know the whole fan base doesn't feel that way. But the fan base that really feels like it's okay to pay $3.8 million or whatever it is this year for Odell Beckham and $11.4 million plus whatever incentives he earns for him next year for this year's play because he's not going to be on the team next year. I just don't understand. I mean, that's the delayed gratification is just not part of the general fan base's understanding. They want it now. And I got to say, as a season ticket holder, I don't want my entire future of my season tickets mortgaged. I just do not want that. So it keeps coming back to this, and I don't want to bring it up every single episode, but I'm particularly frustrated by the Odell Beckham signing and the amount they paid and how they structured that payment.
Yeah, and like I said, you kind of hear what the people are saying, the people who are tired of the model of consistency. But my whole thing is, like, I'd rather have a chance to win it all every year than to go all in for a year or two and just, you know, kind of be where the Rams are at now and just be, you know, up creek without a paddle.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, fortunately, the Ravens haven't traded their first round draft picks, you know, into the future to try and get things done. But hey, if you're a young person and you don't really remember the purge of 2002, it happened to work out in the Ravens' favor, but it was a forced purge after the Ravens did a bunch of things in 2001, signed Elvis Gerback, signed Leon Searcy, signed a bunch of other players. Leon Searcy never played a snap for the Ravens. Elvis Gerback played 1 year of a five-year deal, and it forced a complete overhaul of that team. Fortunately, the defense was able to hold it together with the drafting of Ed Reed in particular. But the offense, you know, it took years to put a decent offense together for that Ravens team, really until Flacco arrived. So it's just the risk that they've put the Ravens in for 2024 and beyond is at a very high level. And I'm not convinced the 2023 team is really worthy of that sort of risk.
Yeah, when you look around the landscape of the AFC, you're like, man. And if we were in the NFC making these kind of moves, I'd be like, okay, you know, the conference is really watered down. It's really only like two or three top teams in there. The Niners with all the uncertainty at quarterback, with, you know, whether it's Trey Lance and the injured Brock Purdy, you know, and then really the only guy you're really competing with is, you know, maybe Dallas and Philadelphia for sure. But in the AFC where everybody's so loaded, it's just like going all in a loaded AFC is so dangerous. I mean, it's one of those things that we're like, it's almost like playing Russian roulette, and you're hoping that, you know, you don't freaking blow your brains out at the end of the season.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about some of these running backs here. We'll do our 10-1 countdown. Hopefully get some people excited about this draft class here. I think the Ravens are definitely going to be, I know on our draft show, we're going to probably be rooting for running backs to be taken early and often. Because I think the Ravens will have some opportunities to get guys later on that still could be pretty good for them. But let's start off. You're the guest. Start with your number 10 guy.
My number 10 guy, I know he probably won't be – I don't even know if he'll be on your honorable mentions list, Ken, just because of his age and somewhat injury history. But Muhammad Ibrahim from Minnesota, he's a guy that I really like. He's a little bit older, 24 years old, and he had somewhat of an injury history. But he's a guy – I just, like, love his running style so much. I mean, just from – like he kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, I've seen him be compared to Damian Pierce, for the guy who got taken out of Florida by the Texans last year. But to me, he kind of looks like a reminiscent of a little bit of like Marshawn Lynch with his kind of wide, like, running stance. And he's such a violent runner, downhill runner, another shot away from contact, actually tries to initiate it more times than not. And yeah, he's a guy, he loves like the stiff arm defenders into the earth's core if he can. I just love that kind of violent running style. And for a team that, you know, has Gus Edwards essentially on a 1 year deal, they could be looking for another power back here in the near future.
Okay. So let me explain my thoughts on the guy. 25 years old on or about opening day, 9/8/98 is his birthday. So he'll be 25 in September. 4:52 at his pro day. We got no idea if that's really close to the mark or not, but I guarantee it's not too high. I guarantee it's not really 4:45, that 4:52. He said it has 889 college touches. This will be a recurring theme in here. 327 as a fifth-year senior. So most running backs come out early. They come out at 21. They come out at 22. They don't usually come out when they're almost 25. So it's unusual to have a 24-and-a-half-year-old guy in the draft or who's going to be 25 in September. All that put together is a non-starter for me for drafting him. Now, I like elements about his running style. I think as a UDFA, he'd be kind of interesting to the Ravens. I don't have any problem, obviously, whoever they really sign as a UDFA. But at least with a UDFA, you're not eating. You do have the four-year optionality. Actually, it becomes only three-year optionality because you didn't draft the guy. So you've got, you know, two extra RFA if he ends up being a guy who stylistically fits with what you need and he's who you want. But I've got four categories, and there's the top 10, there's the honorable mentions, there's the not quite honorable mentions. It's still, if they use a draft pick late, it's not the end of the world. And then I've got the no list. And Muhammad Ibrahim is on my no list.
Yeah, I figured he would be. He's a guy I've been watching for a while, because there's a kid up here in Alaska that goes to Minnesota, and I've been watching that team for a while. And I was like, man, that's a guy who kind of runs like a Raven. I really like the way he runs. And then when I looked into his background, I was like, ooh, Ken is not going to have him on his list. But, you know, I said, that's why he's 10th for me. Like, the reason he's down there so low is, like you said, I have like a undrafted free agent grade on him. Just because, like I said, his background and his age. To me, for 10, it was between him and God, I can't pronounce this guy's last name, but Israel, the Pittsburgh running back. I like him too. Abatakandi.
Yeah, he'll come up later for me, so I don't want to give away where I have him right now. We ready for my number 10 guy?
Yeah.
We'll jump in. It's Tank Bigsby of Auburn. Some things about him. He really looks like a very tall runner, upright running style. It's also a very short class. And, you know, the guy you mentioned is 5'8", Ibrahim. So it's you know, of the things that you know, how there are a lot of short runners in this class. Bigsby is not one of them. 6'0", 210, 456 in the 40. He's one of the younger running backs, 8:30, 01. So he won't even turn 22 until August 30th. That's good. That's on the younger side. Anyway, it's not quite the youngest. He's got only moderate tread wear, 602 touches in three college seasons. You look at him, definitely a one-cut runner. He breaks a fair number of tackles, but he's not at the top of his class. I looked at Yakko for all the runners' yards after contact, and he's pretty good on a per-attempt basis. Most of his tackle breaking is not elusiveness. It's really running through contact in level two, and that makes up approximately 76% of his total yards with Yakko. So Yakko over his total yards per attempt was about 76%. It's something I think the Ravens could leverage, and that's why I liked him a little bit more. I don't think he'll be an expensive pick. I don't think he's going real early, and I think he's a guy for the Ravens and the way they like to play the run game, or at least they did under Roman. They created a lot of first contact opportunities in level two. And if you get that with a bigger back like Bigsby, you got a better chance to run through that contact. And I like him for that reason. If you want to look at a great Tank Bigsby game, look at the Ole Miss game in particular last year. Great examples of elusiveness. They were ranked number 9. Ole Miss was when the two teams played. So it's a quality opponent for Auburn at the time. And he hadn't really shown up in the previous game. So it was good to see him look good. But Penn State, Missouri, LSU, and Georgia combined, he only had 50 for 147. So he was under 3 yards of carry and not a whole lot of total yards. He has that ideal size. His athleticism overall is kind of unexceptional, but he does have some of that explosiveness at the point of contact that I really like. Receptions have gone up steadily by year. So he's a little bit of a value in the passing game. I think his size could translate to pass blocking, which should get him more opportunities to be on the field on those downs. I think the only thing I would say is that the Ravens stylistically, I think more than anything, they really need an outside speed guy, and Bigsby is not that guy. At 456, he'll have trouble finding the edge out of the sidecar when the Ravens run shotgun. So if Lamar is going to continue to be the threat up the middle, you know, God willing, and these handoffs are going to go in front of Lamar on the read, you know, assuming that that still maintain is part of the Monken offense, then Bigsby is not really the guy who's going to find the edge for you there. He'll be a better runner getting to the edge and running off tackle with Lamar, you know, going through the read option process, but he's just not, doesn't have the speed for that. So that's why he's number 10 for me.
Yeah, I have him on my honorable mentions list. He's a guy, doesn't have the speed. He has nice lateral agility as far as finding cutback lanes and bouncing things out. But at the NFL level, you know, like when you try to do that, you're like a guy his size and you know, his running style and lack of speed, you know, he's not going to be able to bounce those things out and actually get to the edge all the time. A lot of times that's when the safety will come down and you know, I wouldn't say ankle bite him, but, you know, they'll hawk him down pretty quickly. And I agree with you as far as him being an upright runner. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like Derrick Henry, the way he runs upward. And like I said, it's cool when you're King Henry, but even he got caught slipping by Deshaun Elliott, you know, 1 year, you know, like that upright running style. The reason you like running backs to run low to the ground is so they can avoid taking some of those big shots. Cause if a guy comes downhill and lays you out when you're getting, maybe you're caught up by another guy or you're trying to make a move and you're going to get depleted and possibly taken out of the game. So I've never been a huge fan of upright runners, but I do agree with you with a lot of his positive points as far as like, you know, good power back and that other kind of stuff.
All right. Outstanding. Number 9 for you.
Number 9 for me. Let me get my list pulled up here. Number 9 for me. He's a guy. Deuce Vaughn. I don't know if Deuce Vaughn's on your list, but he's a guy that I feel like would fit really, really well in the vision of Todd Monken's offense. From everything we've heard out of the Ravens as far as like wanting to maximize putting playmakers in space with, you know, dynamic playmaking ability, yards after catch and all that, he's a guy that, you know, He kind of reminds me of like Darren Sproles, Austin Eckler kind of dude, one of those guys who's always going to be like pound for pound, one of the best playmakers on your team, if given the chance. But every time you hear pound for pound, it's usually referred to for small guys.
Smaller guys. Heavyweights don't need to be good pound for pound.
No, but I have him right here. Like my top note is, pint-sized playmaker, might be pound for pound, one of the most dynamic prospects in the entire class, but like I said, pound for pound. I love he has that great burst and acceleration through the line of scrimmage and to the second and third level. Runs with surprisingly impressive power for somebody his size. I mean, he's only like 5'6", maybe.
5'5", 179.
Exactly. He's a guy that, like I said, I really like. And he wouldn't have been a good fit in the Greg Roman offense just because, like I said, it's just his stature. Even if you run like a little bowling ball, like in a Greg Roman offense, when you're that small and that light, you're not gonna be a schematic fit. But for what the Ravens want to do in their vision going forward, he's a guy that I really like for them. You know, he recorded over 1,000 yards from scrimmage in each of the last 3 years, including over 1,400 in the past two. You know, if he was ever he would never be the feature back in an offense, I don't feel like, at that size. But, you know, I can really see him playing a Darren Sproles-esque role.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition? No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock. To see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
For people who don't remember Darren Sproles, he was a guy that was a kind of an all-purpose weapon for the Ravens. I mean, not for the Ravens, for the Eagles and for the Saints and the Chargers. And he's the kind of guy that can offer pass catching ability, return specialist ability, and for a team that might be looking for the move away from Devin Duvernay either before this season or after this season, anytime you get a running back or a wide receiver with return capabilities, it's definitely going to be Ravens' radar. I feel like
definitely you've captured most of the essence of who he is. He's on my not quite an honorable mention list. So first guy's a no, the second guy's a not quite on the list. But I there were things I liked. The thing I didn't like is he didn't run the 40 at the combine. He's got a self-recorded 40 time of 4:44. Doesn't sound like that was even at a pro day. Like a self-recorded 4:44. What even does that mean? So you have to have something. There's other backs in this class, and there's one in particular we're going to get to for me who I absolutely love. Who I look at the tape of these two guys, and Deuce Vaughn is clearly not as fast as this other guy who ran 4:58. On tape, I'm just looking at Deuce Vaughn. He's not as fast as this other guy. We'll talk about him a little later. Vaughn was ran down easily by Kansas defenders from a 6 to 7 yard lead on one play that in one of the games that I watched. He's really helpless as a pass blocker. No length, obviously, no size, no heft to him. He cannot help you as a pass block. He just gets tossed out of the way. You want him in there for passing downs because he's a gadget guy. Mm-hmm. He'd be a motion pony guy if he came to the Ravens. So if they got him as an undrafted free agent, again, wouldn't be upset or anything if that was how he got here. Then Monken could probably use him creatively. I can't say whether he gets drafted or not. My guess is probably no. So the only resource that you use up to get a guy like that is your limited pool of dollars to fill out your roster on UDFAs. And you only have, I think it's $100,000 or $150,000 that you can spend. And you can only spend $100,000 maximum on any one player. So they gave it all to Ardarius Washington 2 years ago. And for example, so would they give Deuce Vaughn a number that would make him so excited? I think in his case, he probably ought to think about where's the best opportunity for me. Is there another offense that it would make more sense for me? Don't know that he's the guy you want lining up in sidecar, and that's the only place I think he would really make sense in the backfield directly. I don't see him as really a pistol guy you'd line up with. So he's an interesting player. His yards per reception, by the way, are really good. He's unusual in this regard. His ADOT is 3.9, which doesn't sound like much. That's the average depth of his targets, by the way. 3.9 yards past the line of scrimmage. Most players are in the running back group are very close to zero. They get a lot of screen passes, which are negative, and then they get a few positive plays to basically offset those. The guys who really are pretty high are around 2 yards. But Vaughn really stands alone at 3.9. So he's a little bit of a downfield passing threat.
Yeah, that's what I like about him so much. When you watch some of his tape, it's like, is he so small? He's like kind of sneaks behind people, right? Like before you know, he's already like 10 yards down the field catching a pass in stride. And then when you got him in a screen game, he could just kind of hide behind his blockers. And before you know it, he's 20 yards down the field. So it's one of those situations where his stature can actually be to his benefit because he's so small. People kind of like lose track of him. Like, hey, where's 22? Oh, there he is, already 20 yards down the field.
Yeah, definitely has some of that on tape where he's caught the ball downfield. Has not had good luck with any kind of Yakko in his career. And so pass blocking Yakko, that's two very important characteristics to not be good at. 2.35 Yakko per attempt, so he doesn't really even fall forward very effectively. And 0.20 missed tackles per attempt was really low in the class too. So I can see uses for him. I couldn't put him on my list because of some of the shortcomings, not to make a pun of it, that he's got.
Yeah, all right.
All right, I'll go to my number 9 guy here, and that is Kenny McIntosh of Georgia. Another larger upright guy at 6'0", 204, 460, 240, but he looks faster than that on tape to me. He moves around, and he makes people miss a fair amount. A lot of people are suggesting that he could move to wide receiver. All right, whatever. I think he's you probably want him on the field in pony situations. You probably want to have the deception for the opposing defensive coordinator to not let them know from your personnel exactly how you're going to line up. So Ravens have done a good job with that with tight ends, but maybe he's a guy who would be a slot guy for some team. I think the Ravens actually have too much of their talent already tied up in who's their second tight end on the field on a particular down to really be thrilled with Kenny McIntosh being it. But Kenny McIntosh can also bring you things as a runner. A lot of his values as a receiver, though, 10.4 yards per target in 2022. That's excellent, by the way. There's only been one Raven in history who has ever had a higher yards per target in a season, and that was Andrews in his rookie year. There's only been three receivers ever over 10 yards per target. But the last one I think was Todd Heap. So, it has not happened often. He had several throws that were 10 plus yards down the line of scrimmage, but his ADOT for example, and this is just going with the other running backs and their low ADOTs, 0.8. So most of that is yak. He's a very effective, elusive player in level 2, good juker. As a runner, he creates some missed tackles too, which was nice to see. And he's a big back, so he should. 0.33 per carry. His Yakko is still a modest 3.3 per attempt. So if you're Gus Edwards in his rookie year, he's right around 5. If you're Kenny McIntosh, 3.3 is not bad. And, we go to some other players in there under that. 40 time is a big concern. But I'll tell you what, Kenny McIntosh looks faster than 4.62 to me on tape. I don't know what you saw, but I'd love to hear it. And he's only had 355 touches in his career, which is very low tread wear.
Yeah, that's what I have right. That's what I have right here, Ken. Ran a surprisingly low, a slow 40 time at 4.6. I'm watching the combine live, and I was like, Kenny McIntosh did not play in a 4.62. And so I don't know if it was like a bad day or maybe he had put on some weight trying to bulk up or whatever. But the guy's game speed is way faster than a 4.62. And so I actually have him on my list too. I have him a little bit higher than that. I have him at six only because not because I'm totally in love with his style and everything, but I do like what he brings to the table, but also his familiarity with Todd Monken. And I feel like that might be a guy that Monken's in there, pounding the table for. And I feel like he's the kind of guy that, given his slow 40 time, if you watch tape on this guy, he's not a 4.62 guy. But because he has that 4.62 stamped to his name, there's gonna be people in draft boards to just knock him down as because of that 40 time. And they're like, if you ran 4.62 on that fast track that they call in Lucas Oil Stadium, then I feel like that might be enough to knock him down. If not the late third, possibly even the fourth round. To me, it's like the sweet spot for where the Ravens might want to look for him. Like this fourth or fifth round, I feel like.
Yeah, I think they might be able to get him later. I said fifth to sixth round. And 4.62 is a scarlet letter for a running back. I mean, that's really a bad kind of a thing to have branded to you. But, you made the good point about Monken, but he could line up just about anywhere for the Ravens. Slot, wide, be the motion guy, be in the backfield, of course. He can be the single back and he can be a pony. And then you have all kinds of, I keep thinking about the Ravens in terms of Roman's offense. And we know there'll be a lot of differences, but McIntosh will do a lot of the things that Monken talks about doing in terms of challenging space all over the field and forcing the defense to defend it in different ways. And one of the ways the Ravens have done that in the past is to really challenge the field horizontally at the line of scrimmage in order to fuel their run game. And he definitely gives you that kind of capability in terms of being a guy who can get to the edge, take a pitch, line up in the backfield and be either an off tackle guy or even a straight through the middle guy who makes people then miss in level two if the Ravens line's getting good opportunities. So anyway, I liked him a lot. He's my number nine guy.
Yeah, I like the way he kind of makes sharp cuts and gets north and makes at least one defender miss, if not two. And he can be. And I've seen a few times in the Todd Monken offense, get those jet sweeps and kind of hit the corner real quick, get a first down or a touchdown. So he's a guy I feel like Monken might be really kind of pounding the table for. Like, hey, this guy's available. Pick 120 whatever to. What the fifth round is, like 170 or whatever. But I feel like he's a guy that the Ravens will definitely be monitoring on day three.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's sounds good. Who do you have then at number eight?
Number eight for me, I have Chase Brown from Illinois. He's a guy that I really liked. He's kind of been rising through this process. Him and his twin brother, Sidney Brown, the safety. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys, Canadians. He's a guy I really like. Only 23 years old. He's kind of a power back, but still has like a little bit more juice than some of the other power backs in this in here. I mean, he's a bit of a natural, pass catcher, coming out of the backfield, nice soft hands. He kind of catches the ball in stride. He's not one of those guys that has to like kind of bobble it or reach back or make any kind of crazy adjustment to catch the ball. So he doesn't have breakaway speed, but he has good burst and acceleration through the line of scrimmage. And really last year was his only workhorse year. He had 328 carries, which is, you see that, it's a lot of tread wear. But prior to that, he never had a single season when he had more than 200 touches. So he's a guy that, had got a lot of run last year, but he's a guy that has relatively low tread wear.
734 college touches for me was it's modest or moderate tread wear. It's not super high, not super low. But it's a fair amount. It all came last year, obviously. He'll be 23 in November was one of the problems. He had a very high number of missed tackles forced, which was good. But he has a very poor Yakko rate. His yards after contact per attempt is only 2.8, and that's down in the Deuce Vaughn range. Deuce Vaughn was lower, but still, that's not a good number. He also fumbled the ball six times in 2022, eight times in his career. So that's a lot. And, one of the things, the Ravens don't like fumblers.
Quick way to get in John Harbaugh's doghouse. Ask Tyson Williams.
Yeah, or Collins before him. They've had a series of guys who didn't hang around that much. If you look at the tape, I'd say he is a speed back. His elusiveness makes people, in terms of making people miss, that's not really his game. It's power is only average to create those missed tackles. It's really making missed tackles with his speed that I think has been impressive. He's kind of a deceptive speed I've found in terms of what I saw a lot of was defenders taking a bad angle towards him, which is a great way to get pileups and missed tackles. That's the best of all if you're avoiding it more or less entirely. He was involved in Illinois in a lot of option plays from sidecar with DeVito, and some of those were long mesh plays. And I like to see that because when you have those, then there's going to be fewer questions about the ability to adapt to the long mesh that Lamar likes to run. So we have suggested over the last few years that largely these guys who are coming in who have all the speed you'd want, Tyson Williams, for example, can't really master the mesh point, and therefore they can't really get active on game day or playing the way they should. Even Justice Hill has far less carries than you'd really expect for the amount of speed he has to go to the outside. So, you know, Chase Brown could be a guy out of sidecar for the Ravens who would make a lot of sense. So I had him at number 11. He's my first honorable mention of the guys. So I think he's probably a guy the Ravens could get in round six. Okay, tell you what I have. I think they're excited to get him in round six. And this is the round I think they should draft the player, is what I have. Does he go before that? It's quite possible. But some of these guys will drop to the excited round that I have them at.
Yeah, yeah, he's a guy that, you know, I have like the surefire day three guy. I've seen some mocks and projections have him on day two. I'm like, no way. But like, he'd be a guy that the prime candidate on day three. And like I said, I think fourth round be reaching a little bit for him, but I could see it. You know, I could see it. Just if, you know, if they really like the guy and maybe want to target other positions later on in the draft, given that they have so few picks. You know, this isn't last year where they had, you know, sit with it four or five fourth round picks and made all of them.
And they got a sixth. Yeah, that was quite an effort. All right, I guess we're moving on to my number eight now, right? So that's Dwayne McBride of UAB. This was a really difficult one contextually for me, but I finally did a lot of moving around like a parking puzzle, you know, one of those things you hold in your hand. But Dwayne McBride ended up at number eight for me. 6'2", 215. Love the size, obviously. 7'8", 01. Love the birthday. He'll be 22 in July, so he's not an old buck, but not a super young one either. 4'52 was claimed at his pro day. What I saw is he got caught from behind by the Liberty cornerback. I have no idea who that is, but I have a hard time believing Liberty has a, you know, DJ Turner at cornerback chasing him down. So he got caught behind pretty badly, and then the Liberty cornerback missed the tackle anyway, so it didn't matter. So it was just one of these strange things. His game is really about power and ripping through tackles, not elusiveness. What I liked one time is he had one play where he put two spin moves on the same play.
Yeah.
You saw it too, huh? Okay.
Yeah, the back-to-back spin. Yeah.
Yeah. Coastal Carolina, that was in that game, so you might have seen the cut-up from that. Yakko per attempt of 4.6, that's outstanding, but context is important. They played at UAB, and they only had two games that he played Power 5 teams, and he was 13 of 61 versus Georgia, 4.7 yards per carry. That is a workhorse job versus Georgia, but he was 13 of 34 for 2.6 yards per carry versus LSU. So we got a lot of context questions will come up here. Big game versus BYU in the Independence Bowl is probably the game of his life. They were ranked number 12 at that point, and he really showed up. So Dwayne McBride's my number eight guy.
He's my number seven guy. The only reason I don't have him retire is because he brought virtually nothing in the passing game in college. I don't think only had like five receptions for like 29 yards. But you know what? Gus Edwards was kind of the similar way coming out of college. And he's a guy that wasn't really involved in the passing game. Now he had more than Dwayne McBride had, you know, but not by much. I think Gus only had like 100. I don't even think he cracked 100, like 200 in his college career at Rutgers. And I forgot where he started. I think he started at Miami, then Rutgers. So, yeah. But he's a guy that, like I said, I love his contact balance. I mean, I feel like it's only the second to only probably our number one guy in this draft as far as like balance after contact and kind of like bouncing, breaking tackles and bouncing off guys and still keep on trucking. I love him in short yardage and goal line. His nose for the end zone. He's a guy that scored 32 touchdowns the past 2 years. And a lot of his best production came this past year, but he's a guy that felt like it's a two down player to start off his career. He can definitely grow as a pass catcher, the same way Gus did. You know, by 2020, Gus was like a legit threat in the pass game. So he's a guy that, you know, may not be there right now as far as a three every down player, but he's a guy that can definitely be a contributor, and I don't know, potentially even replace a guy like Gus Edwards a year from now.
This is an interesting player because I love DaCosta's look at small schools. And they've had a lot more Power 5 picks since he's taken over the draft than they did with Ozzy. And I thought DaCosta was really responsible for a lot of their scouting of small schools. And I'll be just interested to see when they get back to some more of that, because I'm sure there's some running backs that they really love at other smaller programs. And for that matter, at any position. I mean, we talked just before the show on our production, just how weak the inside linebacker position is this year. It's ridiculously weak. I mean, if they want an inside linebacker, it's probably a UDFA guy, but they probably have a couple guys they like from small schools. And it's difficult for me to imagine them liking too many of the guys who are coming out this year that won't get drafted from Power 5 schools, because it's a very weak group. But anyway, McBride was your number 7 guy, you said, as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Were it all about context with him?
Well, is it context?
Yeah. Are you worried at all about context? That's just the question I'm asking, meaning that he hasn't played a lot of really top teams.
Somewhat. Like I said, I did have some good plays against Georgia. And I feel like a guy in this system, because I know the Ravens do want to keep some of those Greg Roman concepts as far as, like, you know, run game concepts. I feel like he's a guy that would stylistically fit that. So I mean power is power, you know. He's a guy that shows a lot of it. So I like that from that aspect.
All right. Let's move on. He's your number 7 guy. So we'll move on to my number 7 guy, who's Sean Tucker of Syracuse. Felt a little bit bad picking him where I did. Some people have him higher. I think some people probably have him lower as two. He's a smaller back, 5'9", 207. Did not do drills at the combine. That's a red flag going off. He's young still, despite the fact he's 10/25/01 is his birthday. So he'll be 22 in October. That's a good thing. His speed is a big unknown, though. He claims he ran a 4.3 in high school. I could make equivalent claims that would be unrealistic about what happened to me in high school, but I'm not going to. It just does not seem like he's on tape anything close to that kind of speed. He's got some jitterbuggy movement, but I'd say 4.45 to 4.5 is as high as I could see him being, as fast. And I'm probably looking at him with, you know, as a biased positive eye as I can, so given he went to Syracuse, but you know, I just don't see more speed than that. He's not a reliable receiver. What it's looked like to me is he's had some drops where he's looked upfield for contact. His catch rate is only 67%, and that's on an A dot of 1.2. So they're running him on a few routes that are downfield to get as high as 1.2. As ridiculous as that seems, but you know, you do have a lot of screens which are negative A dots. He's a home run hitter who's not really a tackle breaker, which is unusual. But he does possess great acceleration where he just runs by guys in the secondary. Doesn't necessarily outrace everybody, but does a really good job of picking his spot and his burst and changing speeds to run by people. The context is really important. He's had 37 carries for 274 yards career against Clemson. Really love to see that. So you want to play your best against the best ACC team if you can. He's also piled up some big numbers versus Wagner, where he had his big game this year with 223 yards, I think, in this one. So UConn, Albany, Liberty, Ohio, all big games. Disproportionate percentage, if you look at his 2022 highlight tape, is against these Wagner. In fact, this really bothered me when I looked at the entire highlight tape, because I've tried to see what was good about his good runs. You know, what was similarity? What were some common thread going through his good runs? Well, anyway, you look at it and like literally half of the time of a 12 or 14 minute tape is his highlights against Wagner. And I'm like, we got to see some some better context highlights than that. So that's a problem. He did run behind a pretty mediocre offensive line at Syracuse, which means, you know, he's one of those guys who will come to the NFL and his situation may improve. And that's not going to be the case for a lot of these runners. You know, it's certainly not going to be the case for a Kenny McIntosh who got to run behind the Georgia line, or you know, any number of other SEC ball toters. They're not going to come to a better situation. But anyway, Sean Tucker is my number 7 guy.
Yeah, he's in my honorable mentions. You know, the local guy. You know, he's not a Baltimore kid, but he's Owings Mills right in the Ravens' backyard there. You know, and he's like the guy went to Calvert Hall you know, really, really impressive high school career down in Maryland. But yeah, like I said, a lot of the same things. It's funny you mentioned that, you know, going over somebody's highlight types. Like, if you ever look at somebody's film, especially highlights, highlights are notorious for this. And like, they'll show you like their best plays. But the more so than their best plays, okay, how did that play come to be?
Yes.
Was it because the defender took a bad angle? Was it piss poor tackling? That's like a guy like Kendrick Miller from TCU. He's not in my top 10 because when you look at some of his tape, you know, some of his best stuff just comes from bad play by the defense.
Oh, man, are we going to disagree? Okay.
I'm telling you, Ken. I mean, like I just didn't feel like this dude was like – I just didn't feel like he was really – I know we're talking about Tucker, but, you know, for Miller, I just didn't – I don't know. Some guys you watch, you just kind of don't see the special. And for him, like, yeah, he had some afterburners sometimes. And, like, so I still got him in my honorable mentions. But it's just like, you know, when you look at the highlights, I'm like, okay, what kind of defenses was he facing in college? And then, like, when his best plays came, you know, like, who were they against and how did they come? You know, was it as a result of, like, him actually breaking those tackles? Or was it a result of somebody just taking a bad angle or trying to take off? You know, sometimes I even saw one play. I think maybe it was him. It was somebody I was watching, and the defensive back acted like he pulled a hamstring, which was like, man, not gonna catch him. And he pulled up like 10, like pulled Earl Thomas, you know.
That's certainly bad. All right, we'll talk about him when we get to him. So Sean Tucker was my number 7 guy. Are we on to your number 6 guy now?
Yeah, my number 6 guy. Oh, McIntosh was my 6.
McIntosh was your number 6 guy. Okay, we'll get to go back to my guy first. Then is Zach Charbonnet is my number 6 guy.
He's my 5
of UCLA. Well, I'm sorry, I'm stealing him one ahead of you here. I apologize for that. 5'11", 216, 453, 40, 1801 birthday. So he's already 22. That's okay. It's a little older for the class, but it's okay. 2 years at Michigan, then transferred to UCLA. 641 college touches is moderate treadwear. It's not high, not low. He definitely does not outrace defensive backs in terms of what I see there. So it's not a super fast 453. That may be an acceleration thing. Long speed doesn't come into play too much, but what I'm really looking for is when he's got the opening, when defensive backs are chasing him, do they give up? Do they stop running? Do they not, you know, gain ground on him? And he doesn't run away from defensive backs. Yards per contact per attempt is his big number. That's 4.2. It is much better than his missed tackles force per attempt. So I see a missed tackles force per attempt of 0.27, which is very average, but with a yards after contact per attempt of 4.2, that's a result of some home run breakaways occurring after a missed tackle. So that's terrific. Very demoralizing for obviously opponents, but just it's a terrific way for a running back to add value is big plays after missed tackles. Lots of fall forward as a runner. I thought, you know, he's a big, powerful runner and he runs with choppy steps. I think he runs very hard, kind of like not as hard as Jamal Lewis because almost nobody ever has done that, but he runs very hard with choppy steps as contact is made. And I'd like to see that. Receiving productivity was decent. That improved throughout his career, but it's all screens and checkdowns. His career A dot is negative 1.2.
He doesn't run many routes, but he has nice soft hands. Doesn't have a problem catching the ball. And when he gets a screen, he can get downfield in a hurry and get you at least 10 yards. I know he's not the most elusive guy, but he has this stutter step, man, that I just love for a guy. He's like those choppy steps. He is the guys with a little hezzy, and then you see like a guy kind of just like I kind of do a little crisscross applesauce there, and he has a little wiggle. A little more wiggle than the average big guy, but I love his build. 6'2", 214. It runs with a lot of power. I just love the way he kind of like initiates contact sometimes, especially when he's like trying to fight for extra yards, as you were talking about. And he's pretty good in pass protection too, as far as picking up blitzes.
Yeah, I liked him as a pass protector a little bit. It needs to get better, but you need to justify passing down snaps at the NFL, and Charbonnet is a guy who probably has some technique things that could be fixed because his size is fine, even for the NFL in terms of being the guy. So he'll get with a good running backs coach who hopefully will put him through those drills. And one of the most interesting drills, by the way, if you get to see at camp, and they do this in the middle of camp usually, and they don't really make it be the centerpiece of the multi-ring circus that's going on, but they'll do a positional drill period where they have the running backs go against the linebackers. And it really is like the Oklahoma drills that you sometimes see with running backs and linemen. But it's very much a high visibility drill where they try and have a running back hold off a linebacker. And they even have like this hockey shake line after the fact, because they're going high intensity at each other during this. This is not like typical brother-in-law play in the 11-on-11s that comes up, or the no contact 7-on-7s. This is a high intensity drill, and they want to make sure these guys are still friends after beating each other up a little bit on the thing. But it's one of the really cool things to see at camp. So if you happen to be there, just take a look and see if it's on that day. It'll be during one of the positional drill things. They won't talk about it. They won't tell you anything about it. But if it's happening and you see running backs and linebackers interacting and you notice this high intensity going on, it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, when I was playing a little bit of college ball in high school, coaches always call that the run through your face drill. You know, where you'd have your best blitzer as far as linebacker. Sometimes they even have like some of the undersized defensive linemen come up and just try to run through a running back's face. And it's your responsibility, pick up the blitzer and make sure the quarterback stay clean, at least buy him enough time to escape the pocket or get rid of the ball. But I was a big fan of that drill back in the day.
Yeah. All right. One other thing to say about Charbonnet was that he played with DTR in college. So Thompson Robinson, and he is a option quarterback who does a lot of the running himself, obviously, but also uses the mesh pretty effectively. And Charbonnet in that offense looked a lot better, which gives me hope that if he played with Lamar Jackson, and I don't think he'll be around when the Ravens would draft a running back, I think he will be one of the guys who gets taken before they really get a shot. Then I would think he is a guy who would play a lot better with Lamar Jackson. He'd be a threat to run mostly off tackle, I would say, be your one cut runner that could be very useful after a mesh point. So he wouldn't be the pure speed guy, although that job too gets a little easier with Jackson, but you really want a bigger speed threat to clear out that middle on those circumstances. You really want people focused on that being the possibility and make linebackers read wrong. And if you look at the highlights of Lamar Jackson, particularly the long touchdown runs he's had the last few years against the NFC East, it's been linebackers on the other side running themselves out of position. And that's just great offensive scheme. And I hope Monk can retain some of that, from the Roman era.
Yeah, I'm not as high on. I mean, I'm still high on Charbonnet. I'm just not as high as like some of the other guys, like Daniel Jeremiah, and some of those guys are thinking that he's going to be like a second round pick and stuff like that. But I do love him. He's like an ideal
Third or fourth round pick. Okay, he's your number five though.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have a fourth round tag on him here. That's where I'd be okay with Ravens getting him. But I like the next guy who I think they could get in the fifth round. And you mentioned him already. I think he's at least on your honorable mentions, is Izzy Abanikanda of Pittsburgh. 5'11", 216. Where did you have him?
You talking about for his measurables and stuff? Or
No. Where did you have him for your list?
Oh, he's my first honorable mention. Like I said, it was between him and Ibrahim as far as like for my last spot. He's a guy that I watched a little later when I was putting together my list about Akanda, but he's a guy that I really did like. And I was like, man, I wish I could get him higher, but I really do love me some Muhammad Ibrahim. So,
All right. So 5'11", 216, no combine drills, born October 5th, 2002. That's one of the really key factors for him, is he won't even be 21 until midseason. So he's 20 now. Is one of the youngest players in the entire draft, any position. Claims a pro day under 440, a 40-inch vertical, 10 foot 8 inch broad. Those are great explosiveness measures for a running back. You really want to see that in terms of a change of direction ability, acceleration, all the things. Really look at that vert and that broad jump as contributing to that. I don't think he's going to be a tackle shedder, but I think he's a guy you get first contact opportunities in level two, and his missed tackle rate will go up from what it was in college. Explosive between the tackles runner, finds his gap, lots of big play ability. There's tons out there you can look at. He's got plenty of short gains too, but he's got lots of big plays among what he's got. Had the second most yards before contact of any back. That really shows up on tape. Virginia Tech game, He had several such runs, piled up 320 yards in that game on 36 carries. That's a great game. If you think you might like Izzy Abanikanda, then go and look at that game because it's one of the best games by any back in the NCAA this year. Lots of college experience in both shotgun and sidecar. In shotgun as the sidecar, I should say. Also, he has the speed and we presume his pro day measurement is right. But if you just look at the tape, you can tell he's fast enough to bounce to the outside. And only 390 college carries. So he's a very low tread wear guy with 28 touchdowns. And I think he'd be a guy I'd be really happy if the Ravens ended up getting. Don't know what they'll have to expend to get him, but I'd be happy in the fifth round with him.
Yeah, he'd be a great. I wouldn't even be mad if they took him in the fourth round. He's a guy that said I really did like, and he's like right my number one honorable mention. I love the age, love the size, love the his explosiveness and his burst acceleration through the hole. He's a guy that once he hits that crease, he's gone. I mean, it's almost like he probably does run a sub 4.4 the way I'm watching his tape when he's just leaving guys in the dust. I mean, there's times where guys aren't even like whiffing. You know, sometimes you'll get those little like, oh, try to get him with a little ankle. That guys don't even bother because they know they're going to look full just trying to just diving at air. So he's a guy that I really like from that point. And he's really their primary playmaker after Jordan Addison departed to USC last year. And then he had his most prolific season as a producer on his own, almost 2,000 all-purpose yards, over 1,500 on the ground alone, and then he tied Ibrahim for the most rushing scores in the nation. So he's a guy that once he got his chance to shine, that's exactly what he did.
All right, outstanding. Well, we'll come back and we'll do the top four after we take a little break here. But why don't you tell folks where they can talk football with you online, Josh?
Oh yeah, you can find me on Twitter at JoshReed907. I mean, you're from Alaska, you say 907, but 907 for Twitter purposes. And you can read all my Ravens stuff at Heavy on Ravens.
All right, outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, open for all sorts of topics at this point. Still have that one play. We're still recording those. If you want to do one play from Ravens history, talk about that. If you want to talk about a draft topic, we got a short window here where that makes a lot of sense. Evaluating the draft after the fact, that could be done. Have some other topics, and whether you want to do a analysis piece of some sort, or you want it to be just a franchise building thing, or maybe some scheme thing that you think you see something different for the Ravens, either defensively or offensively. I'd love to talk to you about it. Give me a DM on Twitter. They're always open. I'd love to talk to you. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.